I like all kinds of music, and I always have. And so it would be a variety if I did have a specific playlist. So I made one for myself for today. You sing with me the end phrases of these familiar songs. We got a little Sinatra, we got a little Elvis, got a little Johnny Cash, got Survivor, even got a little Roger Miller. So sing the end phrases of these songs to my playlist, all right? So the other two services did well. I'm counting on y'all. Now, I know not everybody's here because of the snow, but the best singers showed up today. So help me out. Here we go.
To say the things he truly feels.
That's right. Start big.
And not the words of one who kneels. The record shows I took the blow and did it.
Oh, that was awesome. I even like how you went, my way. That was nice. But we can do better. Here's another one.
Wise men say only fools rush in.
You ready now?
But I can't help
falling in love with you. That is so good. That is so good. Y'all want to hear my Elvis impression? He's dead. You know that, right? It's the best I got. All right, let's pick up the pace a little bit. Ready?
It's the eye of a tiger. It's the thrill of the fight. Rising up to the challenge of our rival. And the last known survivor starts his bread in the night. And he's watching us over the eye.
That's right. Don't that make you want to hit someone right in the mouth? It fires me up. All right, how about this?
As I smoke old stogies, I have found short but not too big around. I'm a man of means by no means.
King of the road.
Wow, you all know these better than your Bible. That's awesome. We can't do it without doing a Johnny Cash, so let's try that.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine.
That's right. Very good, y'all. Give yourselves a hand. We had three services today, and you all came in third. That's awesome. Years ago, I borrowed a buddy's car. My car was in the shop, and he said, dude, just use mine. Fairly new car at the time, a 2006 Nissan Maxima. And so I'm going down the road, and I got my tunes on, and I'm listening to the radio, singing. I got Jayla and a friend in the back seat. I don't know how old they are, maybe 10 at the time. And all of a sudden, my radio starts freaking out, and the channel is going up and down. The volume's going up and down. I'm like, oh, my gosh. I already tore up his new car, and I can't figure out what's going on. And so I put it back on my station, and then a few more miles down the road, there it goes again. But this time, I heard giggling in the back. Now, at first, I thought maybe his car has a demon. I didn't know. But then I realized, no, it's my daughter, and sometimes it's hard to tell the difference between the two. This car had a rear console that had radio controls in the back. So she thought it would be funny to change my station and not know what's going on and to turn the volume up and down. And she kept doing it. And so she'd do it, and I'd holler at her, and I'd go down the road. I'd be singing a song, and all of a sudden, there goes the radio to another station. She kept doing it. I finally pulled the car over, and I dictated a new rule, at least in my car, and here's what I said to her. You are the passengers in this car. I'm the driver. That means I get to decide what to listen to and how loud it should be. You're the passengers. I'm the driver. That makes me the DJ. That should be the rule in every car. The driver is the DJ. Now, I want to close out our change series this morning with a message entitled Backseat DJs. Just like you don't want backseat drivers, I didn't want any backseat DJs in my car either. So I go to James, the first chapter, and he helps us to discover joy in chapter 1. See what I did there? DJ, discover joy. And there are three DJs in James 1, and it's one of the hardest scriptures to really get a hold of, but we're going to try this morning. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds. Now, I know you're wondering, what in the world? Because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Three DJs to consider this morning. And I'm glad James specified, because the first thing I want to consider is DJ number one, and that is the distinction of joy. He said you face trials of many kinds. I grew up in a King James home with a King James Bible, which talks about diverse trials. There are lots of different kinds of trials, aren't there? I learned this years ago. We're not all going through the same thing, but we're all going through some things, aren't we? And there are as many different trials as there are coffee flavors at Starbucks, as there are paint colors at Sherwin-Williams, trials of many kinds, trials associated with having no money, trials associated with having too much money. And I don't know about those kind. I know they exist. And I've learned this too. Financial riches can create relational poverty if there's not the emotional maturity to help us steer with understanding what we've been given. Single people have trials. Married people have trials. People who are dealing with loneliness have trials. People who can't handle crowds have trials. People who are retired have trials. The president has trials, doesn't he? Somebody told me the other day that he was shot at. Last moment, one of the president's bodyguards spotted him and shouted, "Mickey Mouse!" And as the shot rang out and President Trump fell to the ground, his aides gathered around him and asked the bodyguard, "Why'd you shout Mickey Mouse?" He said, "Sorry, I meant to shout Donald Duck." See, you all have trials too. Your preacher's jokes are trials. Trials of many kind. Before I move on from this distinction of trials, let me try to crush the comforting myth that maybe you've lived with. And I probably have mistaught this, at least early on in ministry. I would say things as if I knew what I was talking about, and then the Lord would show me later I didn't have a clue. For instance, this thought that God will never give us more than we can handle, that's a comforting thought. It's just not biblical, or it shouldn't be stated that way, because that will lead people to disillusionment. I've met lots of people who couldn't handle what they were given. So it can't mean that, and it doesn't. What it means, the way it should be stated, if you want to be biblical, is God will never give us more than we can handle if we allow him to help us handle it. Amen? And the problem with people who can't handle it is they've tried all by themselves. There's a difference between temptations and trials and the kinds of trials that come into your life. Otherwise, you might spend years blaming the devil for your bad decisions. Some trials you bring on yourself. I grew up in a house that had Flip Wilson show on all the time. My mom and dad loved Flip Wilson. You know Flip Wilson? He'd dress up as Geraldine Jones. There she is right there. And she had a catchphrase. Every show you'd hear her say, "The devil made me do it." Well, some of our trials are the result of evil in the world. Some are our own dumb decisions. But listen, and this is some good teaching. And man, it took me years to grasp this. So I hope you can get it this morning. When you're tempted, do you know what the biblical response to that is? It's resistance. Anytime you're tempted, the biblical response to temptation is resistance. Do you know what it is to trials? It's acceptance. The biblical response to trials is acceptance. My problem is I resist what I should accept, and I accept what I should resist. So take a look at them again. The biblical response to temptation is resistance. I generally accept that. And the biblical response to trials is acceptance. I generally resist that. So there's something to what James is saying when he says, consider it pure joy, because that doesn't make sense at the outset. I'm glad he includes verse 5. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. See, you're supposed to talk to God first. Quit talking about your problems to people who are powerless to fix them. It makes you feel worse. And it makes those people feel worse, and it leaves everyone frustrated. James didn't say consider it pure pleasure when you face trials. Let me take a pot shot at a couple of things you hear from us preachers from time to time, like I did with the never more than you can handle. These are clever things. I've re-examined some of these things, and I'm not comfortable with them anymore. The first one I saw on a church sign, and I saw it again recently. And it's cute, and it's clever, and I know what they're saying, and I can agree to a point. It said, no Jesus, no joy. In other words, you don't have him, you won't have that. No Jesus, no joy. Now, I like that, and that's clever, but don't shoot at me. I don't think that's accurate. And I hope this isn't blasphemy, but I think Krispy Kreme tastes good whether you're saved or not. Right? Right? My taste buds weren't sanctified. There's a lot of things you can enjoy without Jesus. But the problem is the quality of that joy and the lasting power of that joy won't be the same without Jesus. And another phrase I grew up with, and I've never been comfortable with this, and people in my church would amen it every time it was said. One of the older preachers would stand up and grab the pulpit like it was handles, and he'd say, God doesn't care if you're happy, he just wants you to be holy. I don't agree with that either. How many of you have children? Hands. By the way, having children is hereditary. You know that, right? If your parents didn't, you won't either. It's true. Think through that. So most of you have children. Would any of you honestly tell me you don't care if your kid is ever happy ever in his life? I don't believe that. I'd call child services on you if you did think that way. Why have we come to the conclusion that holiness and happiness are enemies? I think it's because it started in Jesus' day when righteousness was equated to this rigid existence where you got to toe the line. No smiling, no clapping, no dancing, no laughing, no humor, no euchre, no television, no Super Bowl party, no Christmas trees, no country music, no movies, no Mountain Dew. No, 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 no. How are we ever going to get the world to say yes to Jesus when all the church ever says is no? And no wonder people feel the way they do. Happy and holy can walk hand in hand, and so can joy and trials of many kinds. That's the first DJ, the distinction of joy. How about DJ number two, the direction of joy? Sometimes our joy is controlled by circumstances, like my girls in the back seat. And I have an observation that I wanted to share with you this morning, and I may be out in left field on this. I've stood there before, so it's possible, but there may be something to this. To me, and I look at our teenagers, there seems to be right now, more than when my grandparents were my age, there seems to be a pressure for us to always feel pleasure. And I know social media and telephones are the conduit for that, but we always, like, there's something wrong with us if we don't feel happy. That's the conclusion. Something wrong with me if I'm not constantly happy all the time. It's not true. There's nothing wrong with you. I'm a happy person almost all the time. I can find joy in just about everything. Go to the restaurant, I'll find something to be joyful about. In the car, I can find joy. But we're not all wired the same, and I know that. Not everyone sees the silver linings or the glass half full. I was talking about this once in a sermon, and I tend to find joy in everything. And a dear older lady in my church, her name was Myrtle Wallace. I don't know how old Myrtle was. She had this scowl on her face when I'd preach, but it wasn't real reflective of how she felt. She was sweet on the inside. Try preaching with that looking at you. I called her Myrtle the Turtle affectionately, because if you ever followed behind her in her car, you would get nowhere fast. I mean, she'd just creep down the road. She went out the door the Sunday. I was talking about joy and how I try to find joy in everything, and And she said, and I think she was having fun with me, never quite sure. She said, now listen, Mark, if you can find joy in everything, then I am not of your species, and frankly, you make me sick. Now, maybe it has something to do with my hereditary, my genes and genetics and heredity, because we were sitting around church one Sunday after service with some people visiting with us after lunch, and we were in our home, and my mom brought up the subject of happiness. She said, you know, I've been paying attention to such and such a couple, and they just don't seem happy anymore. And then my mom came to the conclusion, you know what, I don't know that any of us can name one person who we know is genuinely happy all the time. And as soon as she said it, I mean as if on cue, my little brother, who wasn't even part of the conversation, comes walking through the room. He's about 7 years old. He's headed outside, and he's singing. Don't worry. Be happy. And out the door he goes. And we're like, what? And then my mom says, and I quote, okay, can you really name one person who's in their right mind and completely happy? Now, this is important because the pressure to feel pleasure, especially for our young people, it makes you miserable. And we live in a generation that thinks that joy is solely associated with how I feel at the moment. So let me talk for a moment about the direction of our joy. There's an interesting scripture in Hebrews chapter 12. I've always had this highlighted because I never quite figured it out, but I think I've got it now. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, for the joy set before him endured the cross. See, the cross wasn't joyful. He endured it, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. But the joy set before him. When he came here, he knew he was headed to the cross, and he decided, you know what? It's not the pain that will bring me joy. It's the purpose. When I know the end result of what I'm about to do, or the end result down the road where this is going to lead, then guess what? I've already set my joy in that moment. Not in the circumstances I'm in right now, but I'm setting it before me. It's a way of looking at things. It's a point of view. How many of you use these things when you text someone? Hands. Come on. Hold them up. I want to look around. I love to. Okay, most of you. How many of you never use these things? Hands. Okay. I could have raised my hands in with both groups because I tried and I gave up. I like the original smiley face. I'm a simple guy. They start giving you too many choices, like with your Coke or with your ice cream or with your emoji. I get confused and lost. Some of our older folk are into these. Some of the older guys from the first service send an emoji to their girl at Valentine's Day, and they get back the ones with hearts in the eyes. Ain't that cute? I tried this, but I stopped immediately because I sent one to my preacher buddy, John, that I thought was cool. I'd never seen one. Derek sent me a fist bump one day, and I'd never seen that on my phone. So I sent that to my preacher buddy, John, and he sent back this. I'm done. I'm done right there. That's enough for me. And I realize it's possible to have an entire conversation. I mean, without getting too gross, you can even talk about bathroom issues, right, with these things? Y'all know what I'm talking about. It's ridiculous. A whole conversation without ever using a word. And I got myself to where I was kind of anti-emoji. And there was one that actually kind of set me off, and it was this one here. I assume that means you said something so funny, I'm laughing so hard, I'm about to cry. Is that right? And I realize that when someone sends me that, like I tell them something funny and they respond that way, I'm thinking, I bet they ain't even smiling right now. They're probably in an argument with their spouse, but because I said something funny, they're letting me know, hey, that was funny, and I'm laughing until I, nope. It's fake communication. It's like fake news. I didn't like it. But for you emoji use, I've come full circle. I think they're cool. Not that I'm going to start using them, but I think they're positive and even biblical, and I'll tell you why. Because I believe now that no matter how I'm feeling, If you're trying to communicate with me, you deserve a positive response. What you don't need is to be brought into my trouble at the moment, or my frustration at the moment, or my argument at the moment. What you deserve is a positive response from me. What you deserve is a smiley face, even if I'm not smiling. That's the conclusion I've come to. So again, full circle. I've never been a fan of the phrase, you put me in a bad mood. I don't even like the way people say it. He put me in a bad mood. As if he's the king of your world. He put me in a bad mood. Well, the truth is, you had veto power. You chose not to use it. I preached a sermon on attitude years ago, and a professor from the seminary was in our service, and he asked me at the door, he said, "Preacher, what do moods have to do with God?" Respectfully, if what you believe about God doesn't affect the way you feel about life, do you really believe in God? Really? Maybe it's my age. Moods matter. You can do something completely contrary to your goals in life because you were in a mood, and now you're stuck paying for it for the next 20 years. You could end up in jail and never walk out again because of something you did because you were in a mood. You can lose your family because of a mood. A mood can cost you friendships. Don't say moods don't matter. They do. And please don't say, so-and-so put me in a bad mood. What are you, a goldfish? Like they scooped you up in a net and put you in a bad mood bowl? You're grown people. I'm a grown man. Nobody can put me anywhere I don't want to go. Put me in a bad mood. Now this helps, because it sets me free from feeling the need to feel a certain way and gives me direction for my joy, the joy set before me. So I wake up and I think, I'm going to set my joy in this direction today, and then that way it doesn't matter what comes at me, it's already set before me. Jesus didn't find joy in the event. He found joy in the guaranteed outcome. I played with my grandkids yesterday, and Cooper's the oldest. He's 8, and we're going to guess that he's maybe 60 pounds. I said he was 100, and Shauna jumped on me because there's no way he can be 100. I'm not good at guessing weight, nor will I try with any of you. Don't worry. But I did try with him, so we're going to say he's 60 pounds. I've realized there's a difference when Cooper comes at me when I'm ready for it and when I'm not. Because even at 60 pounds, coming full force to lay into Poppy when he ain't ready for it, he can take me to the ground, little 60-pounder, because I wasn't ready for it. He can hurt my back. My back hurts these days sometimes after playing with. He can do it because I wasn't ready for it. If I brace myself, if I get firm and stand there and wait for it and know, okay, it's coming, it's a whole different way to handle it. If I do it on purpose, like here I am, bring it on, it's like exercise and profitable. If I don't expect it, it might take me to the ground. Same weight, he weighs the same, whether I'm ready or not. But in one instance, I'm expecting it to come my way. When Jesus was on the cross, he wasn't surprised by anything he went through. He knew it was coming, and he set his joy before him. Joy is a focus before it's a feeling. If you came to church to only hear this one line this morning, I promise you, you'll get your gas money's worth. Joy is a focus before it's a feeling. You set it before you. This hit me the other day. Our grandparents, I don't think, ever asked the question, am I happy? Are we happy? That's kind of a new phenomenon, to question whether or not you're happy in your life. It really is. You go back, they just were, or they just assumed that that was life and they were content with it. Nobody questioned every day, well, are we really happy? I love my mamaw and my papaw. My mamaw Leiter taught me the guitar and the piano and to sing parts, and she would go around from church to church telling stories. She spoke at ladies' events, and she's probably the reason for most of my goofiness. I would blame her. She'll tell stories about how her and Paul spent their day during retirement. And she would say that they went downtown Madison, this is one of her stories, to make their day more interesting. They went into a shop, they came out 10 minutes later, and a cop was writing a parking ticket. So Mamaw said, hey, How about giving a senior citizen a break? Well, the cop ignored her and he kept writing. So she called him a young punk who was abusing his power. Well, guess how that went over. So he started writing again. And then she laid into him, called him a snot-nosed brat who shouldn't be wearing a badge and packing a gun. He started writing a third ticket. According to Mama, this went on for about 20 minutes. She said the more she abused him, the more tickets he wrote. And then she told the ladies in the group, she said, but personally, we didn't care because we came into town by bus. Wasn't even her car. And you wonder where I get it. What is it that if we focus on will bring joy? Well, I know what it's not. It's not comparing what I have to what everybody else has. Looking this way, this won't bring you joy. This will just bring you a sore neck. And you're not going to find it doing this, looking behind you and where you've been, whether it's good or bad. Where are you going to find it? I set it before me. It's up to me, the direct. I set it before me. I love Psalm 16. In your presence is the fullness of joy. If I can't focus on what God is doing this moment in my life, if I'm so consumed by what everybody else is doing or the bitterness of my past, no wonder it's hard to find joy. Set it before you. Truth is, joy is not about possession, it's about position. Set it before you. So that's the distinction of joy, DJ number one. The direction of joy, DJ number two. And quickly, I'll close with DJ number three, the duration of joy. You can be joyful starting now for the rest of your life, and it's up to you, not the people in the back seat who you think have controls. It's up to you. People slam into the backs of cars every day because they're looking three turns ahead instead of 3 feet ahead. There are roses. You stop and smell them. I visited with Sandy's niece, Lexi, a little bit Friday. She's been in Riley's for days and will be there days more, and Kennedy spends time there. And honestly, I went to pray with her and just visit with her and let her know we care. Others have been there too. She'll make your day. Laying there in a hospital bed in Riley, she'll make your day with her attitude and her positive spirit. That's a choice, an absolute choice. And I left there thinking, I wonder how many people would have that attitude in the same situation. And I don't know of many people who would. It's real joy. And I like it. I like it a lot. Enjoy this day, whatever this moment brings. This is the day the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Jesus said in John 15, I've told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. Now, here's what I want to say before I close, and this may be the most important thought on this theme. Where my joy comes from determines when it runs out. Where it comes from determines when it runs out. If it comes from another person, well, depending on that person, it will run out. If it comes from possessions, lasts for a while, but wherever it comes from determines when it runs out. Now, I can't speak for you, but I'll speak for me, and I'll tell you how I feel. My joy, to me, is too important for me to leave it up to whether or not my day goes well. My joy is too important to me to leave it up to whether or not you spoke to me on the way out of church. My joy is too important to me to leave it up to the weather or how many people showed up or whether the Hoosiers got beat again. My joy is too important to me to leave it up to backseat DJs who want to change my channel and turn my volume down just to be smart. So, since I started with some tunes, I'll close with one. You don't need to sing it. Jesus, take the wheel. Take it from my hands, because I can't do this on my own. I'm letting go. Give me one more chance. Save me from this road I'm on. Jesus, take the wheel. No more backseat DJs for me. I'm riding with Jesus. And when you're riding with Jesus, you're riding with joy. Amen.